This is J. Lewis Mills, and you are about to be put on the level with J. Lewis Mills. Whether it's truth, controversy, good news, or bad. If it offends you, I'm sorry. If you agree, that's great. We talk about it all here because everything needs to be put on the level. Come in and join the conversation. I promise you'll be glad you did. Hello. How are you all doing this week? Thank you for joining me. I'm J. Lewis Mills, and you are now on the level with J. Lewis Mills. I hope you all had a great week. If you've been out here in California, it's been a bit of a wet one, but there's no problem with that. We just make our way through. So, this week, let me give you a little bit of background. For the longest time, I really never used LinkedIn, the social platform LinkedIn, because I said, I'm an actor. The hell would I be on LinkedIn for? I'm not going to find anybody on there. There's not going to be anyone from my industry on LinkedIn. Well, little doth I know, there are a lot of people, you know, from my industry on there. So I started a LinkedIn account, and I've had several people, I'll just be honest, I've had several people that have tried to reach out to me through LinkedIn because they wanted to be on my show. But this one kind of stuck out to me a little bit after I did some research on her. My guest this week is author Revital Horowitz. She has written and self-published two other books, but we're here tonight to talk about her latest book. And it actually struck a chord with me because I do believe that I fall under this category. So it was a conversation that I wanted to have. The name of her book is It's Just Your Imagination. And basically her book is, I'll let her explain it to you, but her book basically is about growing up with a narcissistic mother. Now I've said publicly and I've said in private conversation that my circle of friends is so small that it doesn't even make a full circle. But if you do follow my social media, if you have been following my social media for the last few years, you will understand that there is no relationship between myself and my mother. Do I regret that? No. Does that make me sad? Yeah, absolutely not. Do I regret not having a relationship with my mother? Well, you know, with my mother being the type of mother she is, again, absolutely not. And, you know, I talk to people and I tell people all the time when it comes up in conversation, you know, I've even brought people to tears and they're crying. Oh my gosh, I feel so sorry for you. Why? Why? Why do you feel sorry for me? A lot of times when I have this conversation with people, they will envision their own upbringing. They will envision their own family members and say, well, I just can't believe it's hard for me to understand how, you know, your mother could be that way. And I would, you know, I would clear it up and I would say, well, what you have to understand is, you know, I wasn't an angel child. However, I will defend that statement by saying at a very early age, I realized that I would be disrespecting myself if I listened to and I respected people that had certain titles in my growing up. Like if there were certain family members that wore a certain title, I would be disrespecting myself if I respected them. There were teachers, there were employers that if I respected them, I would be disrespecting myself. So we have Miss Revital Horowitz here tonight to talk about her book. It's just your imagination. So let's bring her into the conversation. How are you doing, Ms. Horowitz? And thank you for being here tonight.
Hi, good evening. Thank you, Louis, for having me. This is really a pleasure to be a guest in your show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Real quickly, you know, I like to set a foundation for who it is that I'm talking to. So before we actually get into any of the questions that I have for you, I would like for you, if you could, ma'am, to please explain to my listeners basically just who you are. Who are they going to be listening to for the next hour?
Okay, so I'm an author. And I'm a mother, mm-hmm. and I'm a daughter, and I'm a wife. I'm an immigrant. I left Israel with my oldest son and my husband when my son was two, mm-hmm. and we immigrated to Israel. My husband worked for Microsoft for many years, so we live in the Seattle area. Mm-hmm. And I've written 3 books. The first book is actually based on my origins. It is called Daughters of Iraq, and it tells the more feminine side of the Jews of Iraq and their immigration to Israel after Israel was established in 1950. My second book speaks about immigrants, and also it's a women perspective, and it is a story of one woman who immigrated from Tel Aviv to Seattle, always divided between those two homelands and her story around it. Mm-hmm. My third book is actually the one that is the hardest for me to talk about, but I think that it is the most important one to talk about. It speaks about Daughters of Narcissistic Mom. It is actually my journey of finding out that I'm actually a daughter of narcissistic mom after not really understanding what was wrong with me, mm-hmm. for so many years. And my journey through discovering healing process, very long one. And now that I'm stronger, I can help others. And this is my mission.
And with your current book, your third book is the one that we're going to be speaking about this evening. It's Just Your Imagination. What made you write this particular book? It's a little more telling that this was the most difficult for you to write. But what actually made you say, okay, now it's time to write this book?
I was in the middle of the process with myself. And as a writer, what I do best is write. Mm-hmm. And for me to put my thoughts into writing is really a healing process. I thought about the fact that if I am going to do it, there are 2 options. One is I'm going to write it for myself and for myself only. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is I'm going to write it for myself a little bit, but for other women or men like me, mm-hmm. who grew up with narcissistic mothers or fathers. And if I will be able to help them in any way, then I think it's really worth it. So I started writing, and I think that quite from the beginning, I knew that I cannot really write only for myself. Mm-hmm. I need to write for others. I know I'm going to be okay, but there are so many others who are struggling with the same problem, same origin of the problem, mm-hmm. many, many faces. I really feel for people who are hurting, and if I'm able to help them in any way, I would do my best to do so.
Okay. Who did you, when you, so you come to the conclusion, okay, this is a book that, you know, I need to write not only for myself, but to help others that could be in this situation, be it male or female. Who was the first person you spoke to about writing this? Who did you go to and say, look, this is the next book that I'm going to write? Who was that person and why?
So there were a few people that I spoke to. One of them was my husband, who I always consult with him and talk to him about things that I'm having a hard time with. And the second is my cousin, who lives in Jerusalem. And her mother is my mom's sister. Mm-hmm. And I know that she had some hardships in her life, too. And she's a very, very close friend of mine. Mm. I love her dearly. And we speak almost every day, actually.
Has she read your book? Has she read the completed version?
Yes, she has.
What are her thoughts? What's her feedback?
It was very emotional. Mm-hmm. She said, "You did it. I can't believe you did it. This is awesome. This is fantastic. I'm so proud of you. You're so strong." I think more or less that was what she said.
Did any other family members read your book? Basically, what family members read your book other than your cousin, and what was their feedback?
Okay, so I have a very big family in LA area, actually, and it's my father's side. Okay. Which I love, and I'm close to them, and I was very nervous about them reading my book. A few years ago, my mom came for a visit, and there was a big, I don't know how to put it in words, a big drama around her visit here. And after she left, I felt like I was left with no family. And bringing that book to them was really scary for me. I visited LA last month a family event, and I gave two copies to my cousin, who's more or less my mom's age, and her daughter. A few days later, and I told them, please don't be mad at me, and I hope you're not going to hate me for this book. I was really nervous. Mm-hmm. And then a few days later, they called me, and I was totally shocked with that conversation, because they said, wow, you have written such a brave book. We do not feel like you offended anyone. You spoke your truth. We could learn a lot about what it was like growing up with a narcissistic mom. We know your mom. We know you since you were a little girl, and we love you. And my cousin's daughter, who is about my age, she said, you know what? I think that every woman, every mother should read it. And I'm going to talk to my daughter about it, because there are a few things I've done which I regret. So I'm going to talk to her about it. So that was a really very big, loving surprise that brought really tears to my eyes. I was very emotional in that conversation, and I'm very thankful that this what has happened and not the opposite.
Have you sent a copy of your book to your mother yet? If not, are you going to actually mail her a copy of your book?
So I'm at the moment at no contact with my mother or my siblings. My siblings, we haven't had any contact with my sister for years, with my brother for a couple of years.
Why is that, if you don't mind me asking? Why do you not have contact with your siblings?
I think it's really complicated to establish relationships between siblings when the mother is manipulating the kids against each other since they are born. I think that nobody really wins from that situation. And with my siblings, I actually never really felt close to my sister at all. And with my brother, it was a very painful relationship for me that actually could not last long, even after some crisis we had in the past. And he apologized, and I gave him another chance. Mm-hmm. But he's really hurt my feeling. He's pretty abusive. And after, you know, healing myself, I just don't want abusive people in my circle of life.
So would you say the disconnect between you and your siblings started out with manipulation being done by your mother, but as you got older, it was just never anything that could repair itself?
Definitely. You're putting that in better words than me. Yes, definitely. Unfortunately, I went down for a clinic with Dr. Karen McBride, wrote the book, Will I Ever Be Good Enough, which I really highly recommend to every child of a narcissistic parent to read. I went there for a workshop with 8 women. I was totally surprised to sit in the same room with 8 women who had zero contact with their siblings too. They were in different ages, different backgrounds, different cultures. I thought it was only in my family. The more I talk about it, the more I see other people. I went to that workshop. I learned that this thing is actually crossing continents, crossing cultures.
Yes.
Crossing genders, crossing everything.
Yes. Do you think that your brother or your sister has read your book? If they have not read your book, do you think, in your opinion, your brother and or your sister reading your book will help bridge that gap between you, all three of you, as siblings?
So it's really complicated. My siblings live in Israel, and my book came out here. It's actually, they can download it on Kindle too. And actually now it's available also on the websites in Israel, not yet in the bookstores.
Okay.
So if they really wanted to read that book, they would have read it. But my brother actually threatened my publisher not to publish my book in Israel. And my publisher was so scared that he backed off from publishing my book. And I'm ending up self-publishing my book in Israel.
Okay.
Because he was nervous to get sued by my brother. So I don't know. I don't know if they are ever going to read it. I have no idea what they're going to think about it.
Okay.
And my guess is my brother will say it's your imagination, like my mother always did. Mm-hmm. And my sister, I don't know. I really do not know. I wish she could read that book, because I think it could have opened her eyes for some things in her life.
Do you think that now your sister, I'm assuming this is a younger sister, yes?
Yes, 5 years younger than me, yeah.
Okay. Do you think or do you know whether or not your younger sister went through some of the same trials and tribulations with your mother that you did? Or do you think or know whether or not your mother was, for a lack of better words, a better mother to your younger sister versus you?
I don't think she was better to any of us. I think that maybe my brother was treated a little better because he was a boy and not a girl. But I don't think my sister was treated better than me. Maybe in some parts, I have no idea. I know what my mom told me about her, things, terrible things that she used to say about her. That
your mother, you know, you remember what your mother used to say about your younger sister. Is that what you're saying?
I'm going to say it here because it's on my book already.
Okay.
So she would say that she's stupid. Mm-hmm. Because she swallowed the umbilical cord water. Mm-hmm. Okay, and this is why she's stupid. My sister is not stupid, by the way.
So your mother said that your sister swallowed amniotic fluid,
yeah,
and that made her stupid?
Exactly, in her birth.
That's a dumb thing to say, but okay.
That's a terrible thing to say. Who would say that about their child?
My mother, but go ahead.
Oh my goodness. Oh my God.
I'm just being honest. But since we are talking about mothers, and I'm absolutely not going to make this conversation about me, what is your, you said it a couple of times, narcissistic mother or narcissistic parent. What is your definition for that? What is your definition of a narcissistic mother?
Okay. A narcissistic parent is a parent that cannot be empathic towards their children. Mm-hmm. Everything in your life relates to them. Mm-hmm. If there is a fire, yes, and somebody needs to save themselves, they will save themselves first and not you. They will manipulate everybody around them to get whatever they want. Mm-hmm. They will lie and cheat to get whatever they want. It doesn't matter who from. Mm-hmm. There are no borders, nothing between them and you. You belong to them. You're like their hand. When you're doing what they want you to do, they give you something that looks like love, but it's not really love. Mm-hmm. When they're upset with you, they throw you to the garbage. When we were young, I remember my mom would literally pick us up and throw us on the floor and say, go away, I don't want to see you. And I remember my sister crying, coming back to her, and she would throw her again and again, saying to her, don't come near me, I don't want to see you anymore. This is really hard even talking about it.
Take your time. I totally understand.
Yeah. Narcissistic mothers get along better. I saw my mother as a grandmother. Mm-hmm. She get along better with younger kids because they do whatever she tells them to do. Mm-hmm. She doesn't get along with her grandchildren who grew a little older than that. She doesn't find interest in them anymore.
How many siblings did your mother have?
My mom is one of seven.
Seven. Uh-huh. Did you grow up around all six of your aunts and uncles?
Yes, I did.
Did they, after you wrote your book, either before you wrote your book, during you writing your book, or after you wrote your book, did any of your aunts and uncles come to you and say, they know what you're talking about, they saw it happening, anything like that? Did you ever hear anybody say to you, well, I know what you went through, I know you're telling the truth, I know my sister? Did you ever get any of that conversation from any aunts or uncles?
Definitely.
Really?
I did. I have an uncle. He's 89. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Every time, he's a poet, and he was one of the biggest lawyers in Israel once. He's a really smart, good guy. Okay. He's her brother. And every time I see him, after I give him a hug and I say I missed him, he says to me something like that, "How come you grew up in this house and turned out to be who you are?"
Wow. That's pretty powerful.
It is. And my uncle knows about this book. My aunt knows about this book. They known about this book for a while, and they want to read it. I have the youngest brother of my mom. When I was hesitating whether to publish the book in Israel or at all, he told me, "I think you should do it. I think you should publish it. That is your truth, and you need to get it out there." And my aunt I asked her, "Didn't you see anything?" She said, "Oh, yes, I've seen many, many things throughout the years." And I said to her, "Why didn't you do anything?" She said, "I talked to her, but nothing helped."
I talked to her, but nothing helped.
Right.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. I talked to her, but nothing helped. Do you hold any level of animosity towards anyone in your family for not, I'm going to say it like this, and if I'm wrong, absolutely, by all means, correct me, but do you hold any animosity, any anger, any disappointment, anything at all towards anyone in your family for not coming to your rescue, so to speak?
It's more complicated than what you think, because we spent usually the weekends with my grandparents, mm-hmm. and everybody would come there. And I was the one who probably was, I don't know how to put it in words, like attracting fire, or I don't know, I would argue.
So you were rebellious.
I was very rebellious, definitely rebellious. And okay. And every time somebody would say something mean to me, mm-hmm. every time, my mom would never protect me, and nobody there protected me, but the youngest uncle. Him and his wife were the only people to protect me when people were not nice to me. So my mom will not protect me. My dad would not protect me. Nobody else. So I was rebellious. What could I do? I was the only one who could protect myself, right?
Yeah. I mean, I get it. Again, I absolutely get it. I kind of actually didn't, and I apologize for this, I didn't let you give a full answer to the question, are you going to mail a copy of this book to your mother? So yeah. Just going back a little bit, do you know your mom's address?
Of course I know my mom's address. She lives in my apartment.
Oh, well, wait, what? I'm sorry.
My mom lives in my apartment, and I send her money every single month. I sponsor my mom.
Okay, so let me just play devil's advocate here for a second. First of all, you know, you are listening to Revital Horowitz. This is On the Level with J. Lewis Mills. If you want to call to speak to myself or to Revital, you can call us at 1-888-429-5471. 1-888-429-5471. Okay, so your mom lives in, now is this in Israel?
Yeah.
Okay. Your mom lives in your apartment in Israel. You send your mom money, but you and your mother don't have a relationship.
Exactly.
Okay, so how does that work? And I know I said I'm not going to make this show about me, but I can't even have a conversation with my mother. She told me for the longest time that I was not going to be on anybody's TV show. I was not going to make it in anybody's film. When I found out that I actually got the job on the NBC TV show that I had, my mother was, if not the first person, one of the first people that I called to tell her about it. And the conversation, I mean, it was maybe a 10-minute conversation, but the conversation, part of it went like this. I am so proud of you. I knew you could do it. Whatever. I knew you could do it. You never stopped doing this, and this is what you wanted to do, even though people told you you couldn't do it. Can I borrow $1,000?
Yeah, very manipulative.
That's how the conversation went.
Yeah.
My mother also got a little upset with me because I wouldn't help her buy a car, but I wouldn't help her buy a car. Help her buy a car, because medically, my mother has no business behind the wheel of a car. And when I asked people close to her about that, and they said, you know, one person in particular, I told my mother, if you can have somebody call me that's close to you so I can talk to them, then we'll see about, you know, possibly getting you a car. The person that she had call me, she said, you know, your mother wants me to lie to you, but I just can't do that. Because if something happens to your mother, then you're going to come back to me and say, why did you say it was okay for her to have a car? And I was like, you damn right. That's exactly what I would have done.
Right.
So I say that just to put into perspective how powerful of a human being you or anybody else that's listening to this show that doesn't have a relationship with their mother, their father, or what have you, but they're still taking care of them. So where does that come from within you?
My parents lost their business over 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. They were left with nothing. Mm-hmm. So we would not throw them out, right? And I do not live in Israel. So we bought an apartment and we let them live there. They needed some money. So we set a system where we transfer money to them every single month. It's been like this for over 20 years. I don't keep in touch with my mother because she's very manipulative, and what she does is something I do not approve. The way she treats me or mm-hmm. speak about me to other people mm-hmm. is something I do not approve. I do not like that. Mm-hmm. And I do not enjoy her company. But I feel and I think that if I'm able to have her live a reasonable life, and I'll do my best and do that because she raised me. That's the only thing. Because this is the right thing to do, morally.
Okay. I accept that. And I mean, I legitimately do. I think it's humongously, enormously big of you to do that. I really do feel that, you know, with everything that's going on either here in this country or around the world, you know, people are very quick to say it starts at home. It starts at home. And, you know, I kind of do believe that it does start at home. There is nothing about my life personally that I would change. Because if I changed one thing about my life, then I wouldn't be in the position that I am in today. So I would not change anything. I do not regret anything. But I absolutely feel, and this kind of goes into my next question to you, I absolutely feel in order for me to be a good parent, all I have to do is pretty easy. All I have to do is do everything opposite that my mother and my father did. If I do everything opposite that those two people did, then I should win Dad of the Year every single year. That's what I believe. And I think that that's true. And when we started the show, you said that you are a parent. Do you have any, do you have a mixture of children, boys and girls? Do you have all girls, all boys? What do you have?
I have four boys, actually. One lives in L.A. He's 25. Mm-hmm. I have a 22-year-old in college, a 19-year-old in college, and a 14-year-old at home. And we also have two dogs, two female dogs.
So with you having four sons, and this is kind of an interesting question for me to see what your answer is going to be. But with you having four boys, do you think that you would have been a different mother if you would have had a girl? Or do you believe, in your own opinion, you would have raised a daughter the same loving, caring way that you raised your sons?
I cannot say what I would have done. I can only assume. But I don't think my daughters, if I had daughters, they would have gotten different treatment. I love my sons dearly. They are my world. They're the most important thing in my life. And I would do everything for them. I would have done the same for girls. I'm sure about it. I'm sure I would have done everything in my power to make my girls' life happy. And I know I would have loved them a lot and give them everything I can.
Absolutely. Okay. Now, as far as your boys are concerned, do they have a relationship with their grandmother?
So my oldest, she calls him pretty often, and he calls her every now and then. I know he talks to her, okay. And I know she tries to get to me through him. I've spoken about it to him, and I told him, look, she's your grandmother, and you should have relationships with her. Mm-hmm. But I really do not want you to be put on the spot or to be a mediator. So whenever she tells him something about me, he says to her, Grandma, whatever you have to do with my mom is between you and my mom. I'm very worried that she will make him give her money. And I made him promise me that if he ever is going to give her money, he should talk to his dad and myself before he does it.
Was that an acceptable answer for him? Did he understand why you were saying that?
Yes. He said he accepts and he agrees, and that's fine. And I hope he will do that. The other boys, my second son, do not keep in touch with her. I know she calls him sometimes. He usually does not pick up. He told me that. I didn't even ask him why. My third, she calls. It was his birthday last week, so I know she called him. He said something about her talking to him about me, and he gave her the same answer my oldest gives her, that he doesn't want to be in the middle between me and her. So it's not very close relationships. It's they do not live in the same continent too. So it is what it is. It's not very close, but they have some relationships. Yeah.
Do you think, and then we'll get to talking about your book. So a lot of times people can say somebody has mental illness just because they're upset at them. But when people do that, they don't understand how much they are actually diminishing the mental illness community as it being a real thing. So I'm going to ask you this question, but I really feel like you understand what I mean when I ask it. Do you think that in your upbringing or to date now, do you think your mother was suffering from or is suffering from any level of mental illness to be able to treat you or manipulate you or anybody else this way when you were younger, or to keep trying to stir the pot this late in life? Do you think that any of that is attributed to any level of mental illness?
So, first of all, narcissism is borderline. It's a borderline mental illness. And second, my mom was raised by a narcissist mother.
Your mother was raised by a narcissistic mother.
Exactly.
Okay, so then, not to cut you off, but this is just a question that automatically comes to mind. Do you attribute any of your mother's behavior towards you? Okay, so we're not supposed to lay fault on anybody. We're not supposed to say, this is your fault, this is your fault. But do you think your mother was the mother she was because of the mother she had? And if you do think your mother was the way she was because of the mother that she had, is that in any way just a little wiggle room for you to try and reconcile with your mother?
I think you're confusing a few things. First of all, it's not reconciling or something like this. It doesn't. It's not about that. I don't talk to my mom, not because I'm mad at her or she can do something different, okay? Mm-hmm. She's not able to do anything different. She is who she is. Mm-hmm. I forgave her a long time ago. I know where she comes from. By the way, when I told, I spoke to my aunt about that, I said, well, you both were raised by a narcissistic mother. What she said to me was, oh, yes, but your mom turned out to be worse than my mom.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, that was really actually, okay. I didn't expect that. I do not keep in touch with my mom because I don't want to be in a position where I talk to somebody and I always need to think, are they trying to bullshit me here? What is she trying to get out of me?
Yes.
What does she need from me?
Yes.
It's poisoning for me. Mm-hmm. It's not healthy for me. I don't want to be in that position anymore. That is the reason I do not keep in touch with her.
Okay. Okay. That's a fair answer. Now, your book. How long did it take for you to write It's Just Your Imagination? And tell my listeners, if you would, please, how you came up with the title of your book.
The title of the book was one of the first thing I knew was the name of the book I might publish or not. Mm-hmm. This is the title. If I am publishing it, this is going to be the title. Mm-hmm. Because It's Just Your Imagination is something my mom used to say to me so many times whenever I saw her lying, I don't know, at the post office, mm-hmm. at the bank, to mm-hmm. a friend, to my dad, to my sibling, to her sibling, anybody. I would tell her, Mom, why did you lie here? You could have said the truth. Why did you lie? She would say, just your imagination. Mm. So anytime I confronted my mom, it was just my imagination. When somebody does it to a little girl, they are actually building something in her mind to always doubt what she sees in her eyes.
Yes.
And I think this is the most horrible, terrible thing somebody can do to anyone.
I absolutely agree. 100% do I agree with that. Once you were finished writing your book, what did you get from it? What did you get out of it? What was the feeling you had when you knew you were finished? Not when you thought you were finished and then went back and did a few rewrites, but once the book was all said and done, you're ready to publish it. How were you feeling at that moment?
I felt relieved that I did it and I wrote it. And I felt very nervous, and this is why this book was waiting for some months. I had to be complete with myself about publishing it. And actually, it's very funny what I'm going to say to you. One of the reasons that I did not wait for my mom to pass away before I published was that I thought that waiting for somebody to die in order to publish a book is not something so nice to do. It's not moral at all. So I better publish it.
Yeah, I agree.
So it is what it is. Yes, I was very nervous when it went to the print house. I was very nervous that my family members would read it and would not want to talk to me anymore. I was pleasantly surprised to see that there is love in my life, and my family in LA supporting me, and my cousins in Israel, and my uncle and my aunt are supporting me. Mm-hmm. And it's not really obvious to me. I really appreciate that. Totally appreciate that.
Do you have any family members that do not appreciate the fact that you wrote this book?
Since I think that people who read it from my family approved it, if I may say this, and thought it was a good book and it was a good idea to write it. And I know that there are some of them who did not read it yet. And I know that some of them, I'm not very sure about my book. So I'm just, you know, I'm in the middle of this process. I'm waiting for them to read that book and see what they say. But I'm not as nervous as I was actually after speaking to my family in Israel. And they told me, you know, my uncle said, you have to publish it. And after my oldest uncle always supports me, and my aunt supports me. So my cousins, really, my cousin supports me. So I'm not alone here. I'm not alone. And it's a different experience for me now that I know that I have support. Mm-hmm. If it was only me against the world,
yes,
I think it would have been really hard. I have a very supportive husband, very supportive. And I'm lucky to have him by my side. And he was with me in this process.
How do you feel as though you are a different parent than your mother was? What are the glaring differences that you purposely or not purposely achieved in being a parent that are so drastically different from your mom?
So I really respect boundaries between my kids and myself.
Okay.
Sometimes I respect them too much. So my son can call me, my oldest son will call me and say, Mom, why didn't you call me for the whole week? I know that I overdid things, like overprotected them. Mm-hmm. Because nobody protected me.
Yes.
So I know it. I did my best here. I'm not sure it was always the right thing to do.
Sure.
I think the part of them living in the house was maybe harder for them because they were so protected.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure I'm not a perfect mother. I know I'm doing mistakes every day. And this is the biggest thing that is very different from my mom, because my mother never did and never does any mistake. I want to say something. My mom, the last time she came here, it was one evening that we sat across each other after the Jewish New Year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading my book. She was reading her book. And she raised her eyes and she looked at me and she said, "I don't think I ever hurt any human being in this world." Wow. Ever. And believe me, I almost choked. I will never forget that, really.
If you could say you had any, and as you said, you know, there is, in my opinion, there is no such thing as a perfect parent. I don't care who you are. I don't really care how you were brought up. There is no such thing as a perfect parent. So having said that, what similarities do you recognize or notice that you have as a parent that your mother had?
Oh, that's a tough one. I didn't get only bad things from my mom. My mom was very lively.
Mm-hmm.
She did lots of fun things with us when we were young. So mm-hmm. I tried doing the same with my kids.
Okay.
Taking them on trips. And I know this is something I learned from her. I think that when I get really upset, I can say things I don't really mean.
Okay.
I think that the difference between us is that I go and apologize after that.
Mm, okay.
I really, it's hard to answer such a question. I'm really trying not to be my mother in any kind of way that hurted me, you know.
That's something consciously that you do. You that's at the forefront of your mind, right?
Definitely, and okay. Especially the relationships between my kids is super important for me. Mm-hmm. And whenever my kids, you know, they call each other and they talk to each other and they say they miss each other, I'm really in tears. My 25-year-old just celebrated his birthday, and we asked him, "What do you want for your birthday?" And he said, "Oh, he's coming home for Passover." He said, "Oh, what I want to do is I want to go with my siblings to watch a baseball game. Would you buy us ticket?" And I said, "Absolutely, my pleasure."
Oh, yeah, that's a good kid right there.
The more time they can spend together and enjoy each other, this is, you know, the best feeling ever for their dad and for me. So,
yes,
I did something good here.
Well, Ms. Horowitz, we are coming to the end of the show. So I'm going to let this be the last real question that I ask you. Did you write this book for anybody or any group of people specifically? Or was this book more your own therapy?
It was for both. Specifically, I really wanted my cousin to read it, since she was raised by my mom's sister. Mm-hmm. It was a different version of narcissism, and there were so many things she did not understand. So I really wanted her to read it. So she was in the back of my head all the time. I wrote it for myself as a healing process, Because if I put it in words, if I see it in front of my eyes, it's a real thing. It really happened to me.
Yes.
And my husband, by the way, when he read the book, he said, "Whoa, you are too nice to her."
Yeah, that's what us husbands will say. Well, I'm not a husband, but I get it. I totally understand. I haven't written a book about my situations because I just wouldn't be that nice. So, I mean, I legitimately understand where he's coming from, and I understand what he means. I usually will, every week when I have a guest, when we do come to the end of the show, I will give them a minute or two to leave my listeners with something. So what would you like to leave my listeners with this week as your final thought?
If you hear it, if you see it, if you feel it, it's there. It's there. Believe your eyes, believe your ears. And you all deserve love. We all deserve love, true love.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Ms. Horowitz. I look forward to having you back after the book has been out for a little bit, so that you can tell us how it's doing. Now, I usually like to leave my listeners with the final thought, and this conversation here for me, It really just kind of supported what I've been saying for at least the last 2, 3, 4 years now. Don't give respect to titles of people. Give respect to people that respect you. I was at a very early age when, as I said in the beginning of the show, there are a lot of people that I lost respect for when I was younger, because I understood that they're not living up to the title that they wear. And when you hear J. Lewis Mills say, "I don't care about something," I legitimately mean, I don't care. I could really care less. So I don't care if you wore the title of mother, father, sister, brother, aunt, uncle, cousin, pastor, best friend, teacher, employer, classmate, what else is there? Employee, partner, person that you work with. I don't give a flying floozy, you know what, who it is. If someone is not treating you the way you deserve to be treated, you are disrespecting yourself. A lot of times when I get into conversations myself with people, as I said in the beginning of the show, when I get into conversations with people, "Oh, there's no way I could treat my mom like that. Oh, there's no way I could treat my sister like that." Okay, well, then that just means you don't have the same fucking mother that I did. You don't have the same sister that I did. Maybe if I had your mother, maybe if I had your sister, maybe if I had your aunt, maybe if I had your cousin, then I wouldn't be able to treat them like that either. But when you deal with people who feel like, "Well, I'm your mother, you have to respect me." The fuck, I don't. No, I don't have to respect you just because you're my mother. I don't have to respect you just because you're my father, just because you're a sibling. I don't have to respect you just because you're older than I am and you're my teacher. I don't have to do that. All I have to do in this life is stay black and die. That's it. That's all I have to do in life. Everything else in life to me is a choice. Some of us make good choices. Some of us make bad choices. Some of us that make bad choices learn from those bad choices and don't make those choices again. Some of us don't learn from our bad choices. That's what all makes us individual, people. But individually and collectively, we all need to live by the same standard. If you don't respect me, I don't respect you. That's just it. I think this whole, it's time to turn another cheek, it's time to be the bigger person, that has been pushed way overboard. Like, I remember back when I was growing up, there was something that, some saying that a lot of businesses used to say, used to have, when they would say, the customer is always right. Okay. Maybe that worked at one time when you didn't have such dishonest people. But nowadays, you go into a store and you see how many of those same stores are saying the customer is always right. Because when certain people hear, well, the customer is always right, so no matter what I say, I can walk into that store and tell them they did anything, and they're going to give me what I want because the customer is always right. We don't live in that time anymore, people. We really don't. If you grew up with a mother like mine, my mother sat and told me one day, I can say anything to anybody about you that I want to, and they'll believe it. And I can show you better than I can tell you. Who does that?
Right.
Like in the real world, who goes up to their child and says, I can tell people anything I want to about you, and they'll believe me over you because I'm your mother. Really? So if that's the person you're going to show me you are when I'm fucking 8, please understand, when I get a few decades older than 8, it's not the same situation around here, sweetie. It's not the same situation around here. So if you are one of my listeners that feels like you need to listen to a parent just because they're a parent, but you know good and damn wrong well what they're saying to you is wrong, nobody is ever going to love you more than you love you. And I don't care who it is. You can have the best husband in the world. You can have the best wife in the world. You can have the best girlfriend, the best boyfriend, the best whatever you have in your life. You can have the best. But nobody is going to love, respect, and appreciate you more than you love, honor, respect, and appreciate yourself. I think that's enough of a rant. You all know I can keep going and going and going, but I'll just leave it there. Nobody is ever going to respect you more than you respect you. So throw those titles to the wind. They mean nothing. Live within your own truth. Live with knowing your own worth. Live within your own level of respect. And I don't care how old you are. If you're listening to my voice, listen to my voice. Listen to what I'm saying to you. I thank you all for joining me this week. Thank you again, Ms. Horowitz. I will absolutely have you on again to talk a little bit more about your book. As I said, once it's hit the shelves, and I'm really interested to find out what the feedback is going to be from people that are not family members. I'm looking forward to seeing how many people actually come to you and tell you helped save their life, or you helped them realize that the problem really wasn't them. That's what I'm really looking forward to hearing about. How many lives just your one book has touched. And for my listeners out there, the name of the book is It's Just Your Imagination. The author of the book is Ms. Revital Horowitz. You spell her name Revital. Last name is Horowitz, Horowitz. Thank you very much, ma'am, for being here again. I hope you all have a great week. Next week, we're going to do another J. Lewis mailbag because, boy, oh, boy, have I got some interesting emails to share with you all. So make sure you join me next week. Until then, you know me, every week, what do I say about this time? We are out.
Are you inspired? Can I inspire you more? Come join me every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. on Station 2 here at BBS Radio. Let's get inspired together. Come join me. You'll be glad you did.